And welcome to I Can Too Attitude, lesson number 10, on the 12th of October, 2016. Michael, I had a story told to me yesterday that really was a bit shocking. It wasn't somebody that's part of the I Can training, but they were telling a story about firing their accountant. Have you ever fired a professional service provider, Mike?
No, I haven't. I think I'd be terrified to.
Well, this story was pretty interesting because the guy said, look, you know, I like you. I like your family. I'd love to have dinner with you and your wife and your family at any time, but your professional services with me after years and years are terminated. They're over. And, you know, it wasn't even a question of let me reconsider or let me think about it. It was final. It was done. And he said in due part, customer-centric or the lack thereof focus. And it was tax season. He knows he's busy. But he said he made almost 20 phone calls with voicemails and no return. He said, I would have been happy with a receptionist or an assistant or anything like that to make communication. But he said it put me into a panic. And when it comes to taxes and tax seasons, I want to know that everything's being taken care of. And he goes, when I finally got the call from him, I'd already made my decision that you're fired. And when I heard the story of it being a customer-centric issue, it dawned on me that customer-centric focus isn't just for LinkedIn or network marketing. It's everything in life. And the amount of lessons that this group of people have had is going to be so valuable for them in years to come, Mike, that it was interesting to hear a non-LinkedIn, non-network marketing experience of a lack of customer-centric focus. Now, we can get it at Costco or Home Depot or anywhere we're shopping, the grocery store. But here was a guy that had spent decades of professional services, and it wasn't negotiable. And I think the funny part about this, Mike, was he said at the end, he said, I got to believe that you're probably going to fix this problem now that this has happened. And he said, yes, I am. Unfortunately, why does it have to come to that, you know, for him to recognize that he had this problem and he lost a 20-year client over it? And like this guy said, I'm not upset. You know, I still want to break bread and have dinner with you. I love you and your family, but our professional services are finished. How big is that, Mike, to what we've been teaching for 10 weeks?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think more and more people are expecting a higher level of service from pretty much everybody they're working with. It was like the last lesson number 9 when Marty pointed out, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking about the guy that I get my car lease from who I hardly ever see. I mean, maybe once in a few years. We have a little email exchange and maybe a phone call, but the littlest effort, but this guy is somebody I really trust and respect because he's come through always. He's on the ball. He's to the point. And so I realize that my level of expectation when it comes to service, customer service, is really, really high. I don't expect them to do any more than what is necessary, but they have to be on point. They have to be on target. And I think that's true for everybody in the world these days, as our experience of acquiring products has become so profound. You can buy anything, anywhere, anytime, 24/7. And it's coming down to the only distinction, and pretty much everybody's selling the same thing everybody else is selling when they're looking for, like I was last night, a desk lamp. I can get the same desk lamp from 10 different suppliers. So what's going to be the demarcation point? It's going to be purely the ease with which I can get what I want and how good that customer service experience is. So I think it's huge, and I think we're going to see more and more of it. I wanted to also mention that the lesson inspired me to think about, Marty talked about a psychological elevator talk in the last dialogue. And I was thinking this through, and I asked my group, my Team Kaizen Roundtable group, over the last 24 hours, to apply that concept to an elevator talk for the business so that it's very specifically business-oriented. What would your elevator talk be if you were looking for a particular type of person? Put yourself in their shoes. Ask yourself, how would they react to what your elevator talk is? So I think this idea of customer-centric is really about putting yourself in the shoes of the other person and knowing that you'd want to be treated a certain way, so should they be treated that way. So it's by putting ourselves in the shoes of the other person, it's the golden rule, essentially, being repeated in this business form. The golden rule is, you know, do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. So I think it's a life lesson. And they're going to – I see myself listening more carefully. I'm sure everyone on this call is listening more carefully to everybody they're speaking with, whether it's a child in their family or a sister or a brother or whatever. I'm sure this is happening to you as it is to me.
Yeah, before we turn – thank you, Mike. Before we turn this over to Marty, I just – you know, you kind of sparked something in my mind there as a desk lamp. If you're interested, I have a Kinko Light 2. It uses less electrical power and lasts 60 times longer. It's a full spectrum light technology, and it, you know, approximates sunlight. It's used to supplement conventional artificial lighting, and I don't know if you're interested.
I have that on my desk as well. I need one with an electrical plug on the front of it.
My apologies, Marty. Calm down and speed up.
You two are brutal. Anyway, lesson great week for ICANN.
We got a bad connection there, Marty. I don't know if you're walking or not. Can you start again?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying it's a great week again for ICANN because everybody's been demonstrating the commitment to themselves, to each other, and, of course, to NECANN, and the results don't lie. Do you know that in the survey, over 91% of you said that you'd had a better than 70% increase in your confidence level around NECANN and around yourself? That's staggering result. And the reason that it is because of your repetitious learning, because you just keep at it, and I tip my hat. You're an amazing. Autoship is up. Our morale is up. We're continuing to introduce this business model to an increasing number of people. So what's left? Well, what's left is staying focused. And then you might say, well, what's the right focus? It's an excellent question. It really helps to know the right part of the business to focus on. And when, and with proper focus, you can calm down and speed up. So let's start by developing a common understanding of our word focus in relation to an ICANN attitude. Focus is about direction. Commitment without focus can be extremely confusing. And as we discussed last time, an unfocused thought can be dangerous because it has the power to neutralize our positive thought. So here's a simple story that I made up to explain this. Let's say that I'm committed to do something in the everyday world. Like I'm committed to turn on the garden hose and then I take the action. I not only follow through with that commitment and turn it on, I turn it on full blast. But here's the thing. Did I consider where the hose was pointed? Did I bother to adjust the nozzle? Maybe I took a lot of things for granted. And am I prepared for the results of turning that hose on? Now, I'm using this simple example because it illustrates a very important point, a point which eludes a majority of sincere people doing attitude adjustment work, and it's called focus. So the question is, where are you going to point all of that new high-pressure enthusiasm and confidence? Because if it isn't focused and aimed in the right direction, the results can be discouraging, confusing, downright disheartening. If it's not focused and it doesn't work out, given most people's default position, as the voices in their head say, hey, your new attitude didn't work. No, focus can be the end of a perfectly logical commitment. So you might be saying, what has that got to do with that garden hose story? Well, it would be like saying, I didn't think to position the hose properly, and now the basement window's broken, and the basement is flooded, and it all happened just as my worst critic showed up for a visit. So I quit. I will never turn on that hose again. I tried, and it just doesn't work for someone like me. I guess I don't have good garden hose genes. Well, you think that's oversimplified? Not really. It is just about that silly. When we don't focus, we get unpredictable results, and it's all good. Here's another little trap if you're someone with the idea that focus is important. Given our commitment and our decision to focus, we may want to set our expectations. But to whom do we compare ourselves? In other words, what is our expectation based upon? Is it a reasonable request? Because too often, we want the attitude of Zig Ziglar, the sales ability of Dale Carnegie, and the computer skills of Bill Gates. And it gets worse because it isn't a request we make of ourselves. It's a demand. That's not focused effort. That is a blueprint for disaster. Certainly those people are excellent examples, but they didn't get there in 90 days or even a year. They worked for and developed those skills long before you ever heard of them. And by the way, that's why you've heard of them. They were the best at what they did. So now let's stop and think of the people we deal with, the people we buy from. Do they seem like super salespeople? Well, maybe you had the good fortune to deal with a few really good salespeople, but the simple truth is that people are just people. And we buy from the people we like and the people we trust. Don't take my word for it. After the call tonight, take 15 minutes and just consider the people with whom you do repeat business. Superstars? Or are they just easy to deal with, caring, trustworthy people offering a better price or a unique product? You don't even have much of a relationship with some of them if they get the job done. But here comes the get focused question. How did they become the people we deal with? Luck? Chance? Maybe. But if they weren't focused on being there when we needed something, or if they hadn't focused on finding just the thing we needed, down to the right kind of bread we prefer, it would be a different story. So now comes the million-dollar question, and I'm not exaggerating. It could be worth $1 million. Now that you have a committed, I can attitude, what or who should you focus on? What is the next right thing? Well, here's a trick. Sometimes looking at the opposite of what you want will help you define what it is you are looking for. So here's a story many of you already know, a story from today's news that I think will help serve as a warning to many other corporations that continue to push for false growth. It's a story of recruiting rather than serving customers. Recently, a network marketing company was levied a $200 million fine for teaching and encouraging their field to place their primary focus on getting people to join the business. Never mind customer-centric sales. And I know that sounds harmless, more like a pushy marketing idea, but the authorities said they didn't have real customers, that people were remunerated more for recruiting than for making actual product sales. Now, this case is already a catalyst for change in this industry, and it says a lot about what has gone on, people moving people from one opportunity to another just for the dollars. So here's what we should avoid. Any company that encourages finding and moving people from one thing to another, one crazy concept to another, it's a serious ethical problem. And here's the ethics. Who's the customer? Where are their agents? Who's providing what they need? If no one ever stops to serve the customer's needs, what will eventually happen to that business? Can you see why we've insisted on learning customer-centrics? Why I've continued to say that you and Nikan are perfectly positioned for what is coming next. You have a customer-centric attitude with real products in both consumables and durables. And here's proof of the fact that Nikan is a real business and it's not all hype. When you don't have sales, you and the people above you don't make any money. And just for emphasis, adding more people who have no sales is not a viable fix. We must focus on building a small business. Every person in Nikan can be focused to become a productive, customer-centric business. You know, you don't have to be a fantastic storyteller or a hotshot or a backroom manipulator, but you do have to serve the customers and the people you're finding and teaching to serve other customers. So our initial focus, it's very obvious. Build a foundation in sales. Now, the following is from a market plan developed at ICANN, and its requirements and suggestions have not been reviewed or endorsed by Nikan. It's a plan that will, however, trigger all of the Nikan benefits in the Nikan pay plan, but the Nikan Corporation is not supporting any of this. So if you opt into this program, it's because you're looking for a way to focus and plan that defines a retail foundation. So here goes. First, we need to create a personal sales, our personal sales, because the business will need a cash flow. And it isn't a great amount of sales or a huge number of customers. We want repeat and auto ship customers to form our Nikan Business Center. An ideal number is 5. As you develop in this business, you will have many more. But the minimum we need is 5. 5 consistent product users who are overserved by us. That's our core. We have 5 life concepts, 5 pillars, and now we have a minimum of 5 customers. It's easy to explain and remember. 5 particular customers can become much more than dedicated product customers because there are so many good things you can do with your customers to keep you involved with them and to keep them close to you. We call it Together for good health, for mind, for body, for family, for finance. This could be your signature, which is why the plan is called My Five and I. In other words, you and 5 of your regular, or what we call active customers, become the very face of your business in social media, in your community, in the eyes of your fellow consultants. Together, you can accomplish things that as individuals we would never hope to do alone. Just imagine having this small group of like-minded people doing random acts of kindness or regular exercise or peer-to-peer learning. Or, well, it can be anything. It can be something that you and your 5 think is important. And that's what makes this so individual and so powerful. It is just an easy way to focus on your customers while achieving your collective goals for good. If you work out together, get a picture of you and your 5. Post it on Facebook. Use it in your home meetings on a slide or a handout. Brag about them. Say what you are doing and share the results. You know that people are feeling alienated and isolated, so this is a great way to create recognition and recognition for doing something good. That's why we stay focus on that first vital step to create a real business foundation, to own a business that is trackable and manageable, a business that will be of real interest to the 71% of people who say that they now depend on a second income. If you have this in place already, congratulations. We hope that this simple model can help when you teach it to others. And it's, as we've said, based on 5 active customers. Now, you may have even more, We know from practical experience that the initial five regular and auto ship customers are going to be surrounded by a good number of other customers as well. In practice, it's rare. I don't ever remember seeing it, to hit the perfect five active people without developing a number of other customers and customer leads. Now, assuming there will be more than five is a good and healthy thing to do. But always make things trackable and manageable, you and each person in your organization, to maintain a minimum of five to achieve the goal of My Five and I. So in this plan, we have a name for your committed focus. We call it Building Your Nikken Business Center. Here's how you teach it. First, get your own product. You're your first customer in a way, but you will still require a minimum of five other regular or auto ship customers. That's the basic building block. We require it of ourselves, and we require it of anyone serious about building a successful Nikken business. Why? Well, when the people in your group have five regular customers, they are ready for phase two. They have a basic cash flow. They now can show someone else how to get customers. And if it is of interest to them, they have a business for keeping those customers informed and involved in My Five and I. Bottom line, this is manageable. So here's where we focus, and at the risk of sounding like a nag, we focus on customers. You and your sponsor can review and prepare your plan. Now, if you don't have a sponsor that's involved or who can help you, ask someone you respect to help you and make it part of this promise. I will be the kind of sponsor that will be there as a coach for my people. I will mentor those individuals in my group and sponsor others because it's the right thing to do. These actions will be my personal demonstration of my I Can attitude. It is a privilege to have a great upline, but it's far more important to be a great upline. You, your sponsor, and hopefully your mentor will prepare a list of customers in play, a list of potential customers, and the list of potential business colleagues. Now, I have learned to never assume that my customers would not be interested in the business or that my business prospects wouldn't turn out to be just great customers. I have also learned that I need to focus for a business call, a starting point. First, I am calling about business, or I am calling to offer a product suggestion or something as a service. You will see as part of your homework this week how to schedule and coordinate these prospecting calls. You'll also see on the handout this week a little schematic drawing of how the mentor-coach-sponsor-newbie relationship operates. Now, why would we call potential and existing customers? Well, we already know that a customer-centric business calls its customers to listen, i.e., how are you? Are you getting what you need from us on time? Can you tell me your product experience? But we're also their agents. We may offer them something that no one else is offering. Like this month, Nikken has made a number of excellent product offers. But before you make that call, try to remember their individual details. Did they express interest in any of the sale products? Or what would interest them? Let us not assume that they're okay for now or that you have fulfilled the product side of things. And by the way, what's your backup offer? If they have no product need right now, you could offer them the SAQ. Let them discover their balance score. It will be helpful going forward in a relationship of interest and trust. Keep a file on them. It's important to refresh your memory before you call them. Now, to feel confident about this process, it's a good idea to take the SAQ yourself. You will see how your answers collate with the suggestions made by the actions form. The SAQ is what's called a funnel. It's something that you will use to focus your call. Will they take it? Who knows? Our job is not to make their decision. Our job is to make an offer. Does the offer have to be perfect? Again, Think of those people from whom you buy things. Are their offers perfect? So the task is more about you helping your client to understand their needs and what you have to offer. Simple. Do that a number of times, and you will have customers. And better yet, you will know and care about these customers. Now, here's some personal experience with regard to calling people, people that I don't personally know, the people I call to listen and learn from. First of all, I never sound over-friendly. That is insincere. I try to remain their potential agent. I explain why I've called, and then I shut up. Please understand that people will need time to think. They need time to respond. So don't keep talking, because eventually they will become more concerned with getting off the phone. And since we don't die from trying this, a no is not personal, not permanent, not pervasive. What do you have to lose? It's a just not now. So when calling someone I know concerning business, I say, and this is brilliant, I'm calling about business. I do that even when I'm calling my existing customers. Now, that may seem revolutionary to some, but there is nothing worse than a person to reconnect with you and then suddenly tell you that the reason they called is business. It's hurtful. It's all, hey, haven't seen you for 20 years. How are you? I really missed you. You want to buy a magnet? It feels like a betrayal for many of us, so why take that chance? Just say, hello, Bob, this is Marty. I've got a business idea to discuss. Have you got 5 minutes? Or I'm calling because you said you had constant aching in your feet. Have you got 5 minutes? Just be authentic. Treat them as you would like to be treated. Another tip, never leave a message announcing that you're calling about business. Most of us are too busy already and will avoid something that sounds more like more work. Just leave a message stating your name and asking them to return your call. If they haven't returned your call and after a reasonable amount of time, call and leave another message stating that you didn't hear back from them. So you're following up. Say something like, please text or call me to let me know that I have the right number. Again, how would you like to be treated? I don't want people shaming me. You didn't call back. So leave them with an opening so they can call without obligation or shame for not returning your call the first time. And when they call back, please don't say, who? It's always a risk if you've got a large list in play, but we all want to be respected and remembered, right? So be prepared to answer a call from each name on that list. When they call, you can say, thank you, Bob. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mary, for calling. I've done this kind of work for many years, and my experience is, leave the small talk, like how's your family, how's your business, the school, or whatever. Leave that to the end of the call, and especially if they have said no to you. When you end the call on a friendly note, they know that you are still okay with them, and that is important. How would you like to be treated? Now, if you don't know them personally, don't pretend small talk. It's just awkward and unproductive. Simply say, thank you for taking my call. Don't ruin a future opportunity. Here's a powerful little idea. Now, we all know that everyone's situation can change, so I close by asking for their email. I often send them something. I never send spam. To be perfectly clear, if they ask or agree to have me send them product offers, great. Otherwise, I just send interesting bits of information on the topics they might enjoy, like the importance of sleep, the body's need for good water, a short article on something my five and I just achieved, a new report on whatever. Again, what would you like to receive? And by the way, there are countless good reasons to recall that person in the future. But here's the bottom line. In the beginning, we must remain focused on getting those customers. It's a commitment to ourselves. It's a commitment to our sponsors and our group. And yes, the call can turn into something different. What if that customer suddenly expresses an interest in the business? Do we tell them, oh, I'm only getting customers right now? Of course not. But this is important. You and your sponsor, you and your mentor should be involved too. It's never a good idea to handle an upgrade alone. It's just this simple. Two heads are better than one. You may give them, get them interested, but go ahead and do yourself a favor and bring an A, because an A is leverage. Now, if you don't have an active sponsor or mentor, That A can be a video or an audio or someone else you respect in Niken, but they will become interested because they trust you. But when you introduce a person that you trust, they will take the information from that person very seriously. After you have your five regular and AutoShip customers in place, you will be in integrity when you tell someone else that you think they can do this. And by the way, you could also be integrity when you say you haven't done this yet, but you're getting it done. And if this is taking longer than you had hoped, you may have to talk with yourself very soon. Remind yourself that my I can attitude is the manifestation of my thoughts, feelings, and actions. My I can attitude and my results are inseparable. They follow one another like night follows day. Getting a customer is not going to happen every time you reach out to a prospect, but you are absolutely guaranteed to not get a customer if you don't reach out. Remember the three P's. There's nothing to fear, and people need what you want and what you have. They may not know what you have, and it is really your opportunity to act as their agent. And to keep your mind clear, remember, you can't hold two opposing ideas, so let the negative thing go. Shut it out. Listen to your goal. I'm calling Mary, 7 o'clock tonight, regardless. Here's this week's homework about action. First, confirm or create that customer list with the help of your sponsor or mentor. Two, develop an approach for each individual you intend to call. Three, mark a day and time on a calendar that you're going to call that person and give a copy to your sponsor, mentor, or associate. Make yourself accountable to that task. Tell them when you have it completed, and if they're willing, do a review with them. Take the SAQ if you haven't already done it. Discuss the results with someone, perhaps your mentor, sponsor, Niken friend, or spouse. If you've done it, review the results. Get back in touch with your sponsor, Niken friend, or spouse. And if you're taking it for the first time, be sure you use your own email in both the participant and consultant email boxes. Read or listen to this lesson once each day, and as William often reminds us, since repetition is the key, listen or read five times a day if you really want to own the information. That's it for me for this week. William, back to you.
Thank you, Marty. That was fantastic, as always. Michael, I don't know if you got any final comments, but I would like to encourage everybody to maybe take a little bit of time and review as we're coming to a close here of the 90-day course. You may want to look back and reflect back on lessons 2 through 10, because there's a lot of information in there. If you've got highlights, just kind of review everything, because this is where it all comes crashing home in the next 2 weeks. Mike?
Look forward to seeing everybody who's going to be in San Antonio. Look for us. Tell us your ICANN stories.
Give us the ICANN secret handshake, Mike. Thanks again, Marty. Have a great week, everybody.